Hey, this is Tom Kundert from Portugal.net, and you're listening to the Seleção podcast.
Simões, bending one for Torres. Eusebio. Oh, my word! Have you ever seen anything like that?
Bem jogado por Simão. A passar por dois adversários, Simão. A tentar oferecer o gol a Figo. E a bola é gol! O gol da Figo!
Rui Costa vai! Rui Costa vai! Acreditou! Vai tirar para o golo! Atira o golo!
And we welcome you to episode number 53 of the Seleção podcast. My name is Danny Pinto. I am your host. We, of course, are proud partners with Portugal.net, and we are a member of the Blue Wire Hustle podcast network. Not a lot of pleasantries for this episode. You guys know where we are on Twitter. You guys know where we are on Facebook. You know the website. You know how to subscribe to us. So I'm not going to get too much into that, because we are going to get right into the subject at hand. As it's been a, at the time of this recording, it's been a whirlwind of about 16, 17 hours here. The Seleção, with control of their fate in their hands, lose at home at the Luge to Serbia 2-1 on a 91st minute goal, and all hell broke loose in terms of reaction and who should go, whose fault, and to give us the lowdown of whose fault it is our good friend Tom Kundert from Portugal.net. Obviously you can follow Tom, as you can see on the screen, as we are on video this week, or on this episode. I mentioned in the last episode, I'd be trying to get the studio back in order. The house, again, it's purchased. This is not my my idea of a studio. This is my parents' garage. I'm being very transparent with you guys on episode 53, but Tom's kind enough to join us here on episode 53 to just, you know, now that the funny stuff is over, Tom, about my garage, the serious stuff can begin, and the seriousness of the situation is Portugal find themselves in what we all thought was not an impossibility, but just I just don't think we were gonna be here at this point of qualifying when we A, had the draw, and B, had the fate in our hands. But first of all, Tom, welcome back to the show.
Okay, thanks, Danny. Yeah. Well, you said the funny stuff stops with your, you know, those wonderful drawings from your children there, but.
Yeah, I could never be this good. I could never be this good.
Having a look at, you know, talking about the game yesterday, you don't really know whether to laugh or to cry, do you? It really was so disappointing. And, well, you know, I'm sure we'll get into this, but I admit I have not been as critical of Fernando Santos as others. You know, I did still think he possibly could turn things around. But really, after yesterday, there's really no defence. You know, it's just awful performance. And, you know, the reaction from Fernando Santos himself, you know, doesn't kind of fill you with confidence that things are going to change. But they surely have to change, because that was just so, so bad yesterday.
You know, let's go to his press conference after the game. He and I guess until you're told that you're going to be fired, or you have any kind of thought of resigning, he still used, you know, we in terms of going to the World Cup next year, obviously now via the playoff. It just seemed to me he sounds like a guy who doesn't feel like his future is up for debate right now. And that to me is a little bit telling of where we actually have been maybe in the last 2 to 3 years. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think so. You know, he's obviously got a great relationship with the FPF. He's got a great relationship with Cristiano Ronaldo. And so, you know, as they say in Portugal, tem as costas quentes. He's got, you know, he's got his back in in some ways, you know, he's almost, and you know, we can't forget that he is the most successful manager in Portuguese football history. So I suppose the FBF feel they owe him a debt of, you know, gratitude, but you know, that isn't unlimited. And, you know, we've had, you know, just, I think the thing which really disappointed me, Danny, is it's the same thing, isn't it? The same thing happening again and again. You know, you can maybe excuse one poor tournament, you know, one poor qualifying campaign, but it just, you know, the Portugal's results, and more than their results, really, their performances, they just, you know, they're just not improving. It's the same, isn't it? Game after game after game, you know, sitting back, very defensive, really. And of course, you know, you look at Portugal's players, and we all bang on about this incredible generation of players which Portugal have. And it just seems it just isn't being utilised at all. You know, it just doesn't seem to be able to get the most out of these players. I thought it's quite interesting. Quite a lot of the things Fernando Santos said yesterday was were quite interesting. But one of the things he said was simply, you know, the message didn't come across. And I wasn't able to, you know, put my message across, to get my message across to the players, to push them up, you know, to tell them not to sit back so far, to push up the lines. And you could see it in the stadium. You know, Matt and I were watching it and commenting. Look at Fernando Santos there on the side, babe, you know, making this sign. And even Cristiano Ronaldo the same, you know, push up, push up. The players have to, you know, push up. Don't just sit back. You know, if you just sit back, it's just inevitable that, you know, Serbia are going to find a way through. But he just wasn't able to get the message across, or it wasn't able to motivate the players to just get them playing in a different way. You know, they just seem to have kind of fell into this kind of, it's not really tried and trusted, because that gives the idea that it's working. It's not working. They've just got this kind of, you know, mode where they just kind of, I suppose, because they've got such talented players and they've been bailed out so often, you know, especially by Cristiano Ronaldo, they tend to think maybe it's even a mentality thing or subconsciously that, okay, don't worry about this. A goal will come, you know, a goal will come. Okay, maybe, you know, we won't really, you know, completely crush this opposition, but a goal will come and we'll get through in the end. And, you know, that's instead of really just taking the match by the scruff of it, you know, by the scruff of its neck. And so, yeah, it's just so, so disappointing.
Yeah, we're talking with Tom Cunner here on episode number 53 of the Seleção podcast. A little bit of audio difficulty on my end during that answer, Tom, but I caught most of it, and we'll clean it up here on the podcast audio side. But the thing for me is, and you mentioned it, it's he tried, and he tried to get his message across. He tried to, you know, the gestures of, you know, pushing up and moving and stuff like that. You know, there shouldn't, in terms of getting a message across. And again, we're all human beings. We're not on our game every day, 100% every time. I get that. But in terms of messaging and in terms of what this team is expected to do under his tutelage here, you know, I did a thing on Twitter after the game. It's on Spaces, and I had you know, I talked to about a half dozen, maybe 10 people yesterday who follow Portuguese football, just to get their instant reaction from the game. And the thing that's been most telling to me, Tom, maybe in the last couple of years, is that the identity of this team, the DNA of this team, what is it? Mm-hmm. It's like I can't pinpoint, in terms of a positive DNA, what this team does well. And at some point, I think, and again, I think in terms of nonsense, yeah, he has a good relationship with the FPF. He has a good relationship with Cristiano Ronaldo. I think the you know, it's a fun a narrative can be spun any certain way when a 15-second clip of a frustrated Cristiano Ronaldo who's being approached by Fernando Santos at the field, whatever. I'm not so much into worried about that, but the thing that I'm most worried about is, you know, to me, the equity of 2016 is over. It's run its course.
Yeah,
you know, I like you, Tom. I am one of those who have been a supporter of Fernand Sanz when the shouts of him to be removed from being manager began, probably right around the end of or when we were ousted in World Cup 2018. That tournament was disappointing. The only thing that really people remember is the 3-3 draw against Spain. And, you know, it was a poor effort in qualifying, a draw against Iran, or excuse me, in group play, a draw against Iran put them in the toughest part of the bracket, yet a most favorable opponent in Uruguay. And they just never got going in that match. People were saying, all right, he's out. I'm like, hey, 2016, that was just 2 years ago. Let's give the guy a break. When qualifying for Euro 2020 began with two draws at home against Ukraine and Serbia, it started getting louder. And even then, I'm like, okay, guys, I get it. We're frustrated. But let's give this guy the benefit of the doubt. The talent is better. And that's what we kept harping about, is that the talent is better than it was in 2016. He'll get this turned around. And then again, a poor performance in a tournament. And here we are, where the fate of his team is in his hands, a packed stadium for the first time in 2 years almost for the national team. And this is the performance that not only he and the players provide. I mean, the players are not blameless in this at all, Tom, but it starts at the top. And he says he's responsible, whatever. But if he doesn't feel like he has his feet to the fire, there's nothing that's going to change here.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, well, you mentioned it there, you know, what is Portugal's DNA? He actually also used that exact phrase in his press conference. You know, he said, you know, our DNA is having the ball at our feet, you know, controlling the ball, controlling possession. Okay. You know, good words, but what did we see on the pitch? We didn't see that at all. You know, Bernardo Silva was the only one who seemed to know what to do with the ball. And also, you know, with Fernando Santos, okay, I'm also a little bit wary of people who say, you know, Portugal should be playing this massive, expansive, beautiful football. You know, look at the players they have. But, you know, that international football doesn't really work like that. You see very few teams, you know, able to really play, you know, exciting, cohesive football. It is a lot about keeping it tight. But, you know, having said that, you know, you do need some sort of plan. And what made the Fernando Santos's teams successful at the start, you know, in 2016 and then winning the Nations League was, okay, they weren't playing beautiful, expansive football, but they were solid. They were solid and their defense was strong and they were really difficult to break down. That game yesterday, Danny, you could tell that Serbia were going to score at least one goal. You know,
it was poor.
They were just picking holes through that Portuguese defense, you know, so, so easily. So much space between, you know, the defenders. Nuno Mendes, I'm, as you know, a huge fan of him. I think he's going to be a fantastic player. Already he is a fantastic player, but, you know, he just left about 15 or 20 yards, 20 meters to the, you know, it was Mitrovic in the first half, then when Mitrovic went off, I'm not sure who replaced him. It's the same story. You know, the winger on the right wing, the Serbian right wing, Portugal's left, just had 20 yards of space to play with. So he could just, you know, go in, try and get past Mendes, play in a pass, you know, cause one or two passes. They've got a shooting opportunity. You know, it's just so loose. And okay, I picked out Mendes there, but I don't really want to pick him out because I'm not sure if it was, you know, him himself. Maybe he wasn't getting the support he should be getting. I think just the whole system just is broken.
It was very reminiscent in terms of that side of the field. It was very reminiscent of Rafael Guerreiro in 2018.
Morocco.
Yeah, in the 2018 World Cup. Yeah, very much so.
Yeah. So, you know, so we're talking about Fernando Santos and we're saying, okay, you know, don't give us the beautiful football, but give us a really strong team, a strong defensive team, a team which is going to give us a chance to win games. When you don't get that, you know, there's really nothing there, is there? There's nothing left. And so, you really cannot, you know, I think all the goodwill, you know, and people will be grateful. And I think even, you know, there's been calls, increasingly loud calls for a change at the top. but you don't really see any of that kind of, you know, kind of nasty, a little bit nasty, almost vitriolic, you know, kind of insults, basically, and towards Fernando Santos, because, you know, people are still grateful for what he did. And, you know, people kind of see him as a, I think, basically a decent human being and you know, a good man and a good football man. But he's just not able, he's shown now for too long a time that he is not able to take this team forward. So really, there's nothing for it. There has to be a change, Danny. Whether there will be or not, that's another question. But, you know, there really has to be a change, I think, now.
We're talking with Tom Cundert here on episode number 53 of the Celeston podcast. We are, of course, recapping what was I don't want to use tough language, but I'm going to use tough language. It seemed a little gutless. It seemed a little pathetic yesterday, especially with the start that this match had. You know, Renat Sanch inserted into the starting lineup. Every time he's on the field, it seems like there's a boost of energy. It seems like the offense kind of opens up a little bit. Fourth minute, gets a goal off of a turnover in the Serbian end. And then it seems like the lights, and ironically enough, at the Luge, went off, and it just seemed like everything came back. There was no more. It seemed like I want to say it was maybe Rui Miguel Martins on Twitter said it seemed like they were playing with a 3-0 lead instead of a 1-0 lead, where it could be laxed, it could be protecting, you know, like it just. They defaulted into, and you know, I have a turtle, what, right here? Let's see, right there. They went into a shell.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like there was, like, we were good. And of course, you need to then have two goals scored against you in order to not be in the tournament. And given the track record of Portugal in terms of a Fernando Santos defensive system, two goals is not something that happens very often. Obviously, we saw Germany put four in the Euros, but it does not happen often. But to sit on a lead for 87 minutes, Tom, is inexcusable. Yeah. And that's exactly what they did. And it bit them with the first goal. And, you know, a slight deflection headed towards Rui Patricio. But I thought he handled that very poorly. A keeper of his caliber. And then it just never seemed like they got out of their shell. It seemed like they were then bunkered down into, like, okay, we're not protecting a lead anymore, but we sure as hell are going to protect this this draw. And it just was...
Yeah, it was interesting, Danny. It was just that, I'd say probably Portugal's best spell in the game was perhaps just when they'd conceded that first goal, maybe last 5 or 10 minutes before halftime, when
That's fair.
Yeah, they seemed to kind of react a little bit, you know, and then, you know, realize the gravity of the situation and then push forward. And we all know Portugal have players to hurt the opposition, you know, they've got world-class players playing for the best clubs in the world. And I agree with you about Renato Sanches. I think probably the only two players to come out of Portugal's performance yesterday with really any credit were Bernardo Silva and Renato Sanches. And, you know, Danny, I wasn't too displeased when I saw the lineup. I thought, okay, you know, that's fair enough. He's brought in Sanches. That's like you said, it's going to provide a lot of energy in midfield, and that's exactly what did happen. I was a bit surprised that Polina wasn't started, but okay.
Tom, you and I are on the same page there, because Danilo, Josef Font for me could have started the Ireland game with Danilo playing in Polina's spot, to protect Polina's yellow card, and then have Polina start today, and if Josef Font had scored or had gotten a yellow card, so be it. And maybe we would have had, you know, a lot of if, you know, the whole adage of ifs and buts were candy and nuts, we'd all have a very Merry Christmas.
It's a bit of these, you know, catalogue of decisions, which are really quite difficult to understand, which again, you know, I think that does count against Fernando Santos, because it's just one after the other now. I mean, Polina,
Before I lose my train of thought here, in terms of the Ireland game, for a man who, and this is again a criticism of Fernando Santos, for a man who sat 5 of his 6 yellow carded players, how does he not take Pep out after his first yellow card?
Given
that the result for all intents and purposes meant nothing in Ireland. Because if you win against Serbia, you're in. If you, let's see, if I do my math correctly, no, a draw. If they lost in Ireland, they drew, they would have still lost. But again, but at least you're home. It doesn't matter. The fact that he protected five out of the six, the one that he didn't protect was arguably maybe his second most important one. And then his center back pairing that has played relatively well was not available because he decided not to take Pep out after the first yellow card. To me, that was a mistake. And then that leads to, well, you know, Sunday not having Pep available. I don't think that in the middle they played particularly bad or good. I thought it was just a meh kind of performance from the defense anyway. But
yeah, I'm not sure about that, Dan, because you know, you when Pep picks up the first yellow card, you really don't expect him to get a second one. So I kind of not 100% agree with you there,
but you leave him out on the field for the possibility of a second one. And if you're not gonna play five of the six because of that risk, it's the same risk once you get someone who on a card that they got during the game. I suppose
well, the thing that surprised me, like I said, is Polina. You know, I think we all know Polina is very susceptible to yellow cards. We won't get into the whole Polina yellow card thing when it comes to the Portuguese league. We'd be here all night. But so I was really surprised that he was the one of those six players out of the starters who were in danger or suspension who was selected to start in Ireland. But what did that tell me? That told me that this is a player who Fernando Santos now considers absolutely vital for Portugal. And to be fair, looking at recent performances, you know, he's been probably one of the best players. So I think that's fair enough. You know, he survived just, you know, a bit luckily maybe. He could have easily got a yellow card against Ireland. He survived, and then he doesn't choose him for Serbia. You know, it's kind of, you can't really see the logic in that. The whole João Cancelo thing at the Euros, you know, he gets COVID, two weeks before the tournament starts. Immediately, okay, he's out of the squad. We're going to bring in a replacement, Diogo Dalot. When, you know, other countries, same thing happened. I think Spain, I think it was Busquets, wasn't it? Got COVID exactly the same time. They said, okay, he's still in the squad. He'll have to miss the group games. But afterwards, he'll come back to the squad. That's exactly what happened. He played, you know, he played in the later games in the tournament. You know, João Cancelo, Fernando Santos himself said a few days ago, perhaps the best fullback in world football at the moment. You can argue yes or no, but there's no doubt that he is one of the best. And, just completely took him out of that tournament when, you know, he could have really made a big difference. I think if he would have been available for the Belgium game, at the Euros.
Absolutely.
So there's just, like you say, it's a series of decisions where it's just, you know, logic seems to go out the window a little bit. And, of course, it's easy to say when when things go badly and things lose and you're losing. But, it's just... one thing after the other, and there just seemed to be a little bit of a lack of direction, or, you know, I'm not sure exactly what it is. But I also think another thing, Danny, we haven't touched on so much when it comes to the whole Fernando Santos situation, is just simply the need to freshen it up. You know, I think you see this so often in club football and international football. You know, Fernando Santos has been there a long time, since 2014. So the players, they're going in there, they're listening to him, you know, every week, you know, every get together, they're listening to him, you know, same tone of voice, same ideas, same kind of motivational speeches. Kind of loses its edge, doesn't it?
Sure.
You know, nothing against Santos again from this aspect. I think it will happen to any manager. And you see, it does happen to any manager. That's why it's very unusual for managers to stay at clubs beyond 3-4 years, you know, and only that long if they have success, because it's just kind of natural, isn't it? You get you kind of switch off a little bit, the message doesn't get so, it's not so crystal clear, you know, and also it's the same kind of ideas. Whereas Fernando Santos goes out, you get a new man in, you know, maybe his ideas aren't that much better, but he presents them in a different way, you know, and he tries a few new things, you know, suddenly it seems like it's a different team again. And I think that, you know, that the whole thing has gone a bit stale, and there's just too many reasons now, I think, Danny, to not make that change.
We're talking with Tom Kundert here of Portugal.net. We are, of course, talking about Portugal heading to the World Cup playoff due to their 2-1 loss yesterday at the Estádio da Luz. Serbia Group A winners and, you know, deserved winners yesterday. I think that gets lost a little bit. And obviously, our focus is on Portugal. But Serbia, you know, Tom, I told this to the folks I talked to on Spaces yesterday, and I even talked about it with my dad yesterday. Serbia played like a team that mm-hmm. wanted to go to the World Cup, and Portugal played like a team hoping to go to the World Cup. And yeah. to me, when you have that kind of mentality, and I go back to the stadium being full. You were there, Tom, for a match of this magnitude in front of that many fans for the first time in almost 2 years, given everything that's gone on in the world, to give this country an expected appearance in the World Cup, but just something that would be a game that could be celebrated, a result that could be celebrated, in a team that would be going to the World Cup. Now, could have all put a Band-Aid on a much bigger wound, but at the same time, we still would be in a bit of a more positive state than we are right now, given that we are currently not in the World Cup. We're in this convoluted playoff that I didn't know about the format until the playoff was announced in terms of the teams yesterday, or for some of the teams yesterday. But now you just leave more to chance when you had everything in your hands to get to the World Cup. And it's the beginning of the end in terms of trying to find excuses for Fernand Santos. And it, you know, a new voice. Yeah, I agree with you. Like in sports, the same message or the same voice over and over again can lose its edge, as you mentioned, can lose its impact. Because you almost go on autopilot. Mm-hmm. And if you go on autopilot, you're not being inspired. You're not being convinced. You're not being tested.
Yeah.
And a new voice isn't the cure all for everything, because you don't replace someone for the sake of replacing someone, or you don't hire just somebody because they're a different voice. But at this point, Tom, I think the Federation has to do something in order to maximize the group that is currently in play here for the Seleção, because we are in a very weird spot in terms of timing and age, where this team still has a lot of talent, but it's, you know, its all-time greatest player is probably got one tournament left, maybe, and depending on how this mm-hmm. ends, this could be the end for Ronaldo, given that he might not want to come back, given how everything is going on. Pep became the oldest player to ever play for the Seleção in the Ireland match. You know, João Moutinho has served his time. José Fonte has served his time. There's going to be a transition, but that doesn't mean that you have to keep the entire band together in order to get one last run. You can make a change, and obviously the only change that you can do in terms of practicality is you change it at the top and hope that the players can then listen and work together with a new voice at the helm.
Yeah, yeah. Just imagine, Danny. I mean, you got to feel sorry for Ronaldo if Portugal do not qualify for the World Cup, don't you? You know, it's his last chance, basically, definitely at a World Cup. You know, most amazing player, of course, in Portuguese football history, without a doubt. It would just be such a kind of, you know, damp squib of a way to go out of the, you know, the biggest football tournament in the world. And you could see yesterday, you know, he was just so, he actually, like Santos, was also doing a lot of that motioning to the back line, and the midfielders keep saying, push up, push yeah. up. He was obviously getting really frustrated. But so, yeah, you know, it's really is going to be, you know, they're in March, the playoffs. So that's, you know, 4 months away. So you could say, you know, I don't think it would be the, you know, ridiculous idea now to change coaches, you know, get a fresh idea. Maybe they get that, you know, that famous new manager bounce. You know, if that works, you know, I'd say go for it, because, well, I'd say, you know, is that taking a gamble or is sticking with Santos when, you know, game after game, you know, he kind of says the right things, but we're seeing game after game the same performances. You know, maybe that's even more of a gamble. So, yeah, I think the time has come, and it's going to be interesting, of course, to the FPF, of course, just didn't expect to be in this position at all. You know, you were right, Danny, there talking about the kind of lead up to the match, you know, walking to the stadium, like you said, full stadium for the first time since the pandemic started, you know, such a lot of enthusiasm there, everyone with the flags, all the flags on the seats, you know, brilliant atmosphere. You got the, you know, the national anthem being sung with such gusto at the start. You know, you got Portugal scoring a goal from a terrible Serbian mistake after 2 minutes. It really just seemed like everything was just in place to, okay. We actually thought maybe this wouldn't be one of our typical Portugal games where we're going to be.
It felt like the floodgates may possibly open for this team.
Yeah, at least not one of those games like when we're biting our nails for 90 minutes, but then, you know, it just ended up precisely that, because Portugal just, like you said, went completely into their shell. And yeah, so it's been also very interesting listening to the reaction here in Portugal. And so, you know, the calls for Fernando Santos to be replaced are just getting louder and louder, as you can expect, as you would expect. And so, yeah, FPF have got a big decision to make, and they should be thinking about that quite soon, I think. Well, they've got to come out one way or the other, haven't they? If they're going to, they can't just...
A statement has to be made.
Yeah, yeah. They've got to either back him or go out. Otherwise, it's just going to be speculation for days and weeks, and that won't do anyone any good.
Yeah, the playoff draw, and I can't believe we're talking about a playoff draw, but the playoff draw is supposed to take place, I believe, November the 26th. A 12-team playoff. Again, so convoluted. There are three paths or three groups of four. The winners of each of those three are heading to the World Cup. Do I have my information?
Yeah. Right, okay. Basically, yeah, I know what you mean, Danny. It's a bit difficult to get your head around, but basically, put into these 12 teams, it's going to be 12 teams, put into four groups, and then basically it's two semis and a final. So whoever wins, you know, Portugal, basically they're going to have to be two teams to get to the World Cup, and in one-off matches. I'm not sure how they decide who's home or who's away. I don't know if that's seeded. I don't know if it's drawn.
You would have to think it'd be a seeding issue, because hey Tom, we're the top seed in the playoff, Tom. So the silver lining has finally been found.
Yeah.
I believe Nathan Motz's recap on the site yesterday. Mm-hmm. I believe Portugal goes into path A as the top seed, just in terms of numerical. I mean, they'll be a top seed. They'll be the top seed in the playoff. But you would assume that at least the semifinal match would be a home game in Portugal. And then if they would advance, I could, just in terms of logistics, you would assume that they would probably have a home match in that final path A or B or C, whatever, in the final. But yeah, a lot of that will be determined in the draw about a little less than 2 weeks from now. But we find ourselves in a playoff draw.
Yeah. And like you say, Danny, you know, it's, you know, I think the other playoff system, home and away, you know, it's obviously straightforward, wasn't it? And I think you'd kind of fancy Portugal, because you'd know, even they'd be playing one game at home. So, you know, they should be able to get the advantage. And that's, of course, how it transpired in those three consecutive tournaments when Portugal went through the playoffs. But this is difficult. You know, one game, you can tell anything can happen. You know, and there's some quite decent teams which are going to be in the playoffs. You know, I think Sweden are likely to, or I think they're already there, aren't they? Because they lost to Spain. Austria, I mean, I don't know if you remember, Danny, if you saw one of my favourite games for the Euros, Euro 22, Austria against Italy. You know, Austria was superb in that game, matched Italy all the way. I think Italy just got a late winner, didn't they, in extra time. So, you know, and if it's just one game against a team like that, you know, a very dangerous situation, especially if Portugal kind of adopts this, you know, very passive attitude where they're hoping for a narrow victory.
Yeah, and it puts the pressure on the favorite completely.
Yeah, Yeah, exactly. All the pressure will be on Portugal. Whoever Portugal play, they're just going to be under huge pressure. And conversely, the other team can kind of relax a little bit. You know, imagine it's Austria, even it's Sweden, you know, and these are some of the better teams. There's some, you know, other teams who could also be complicated, but could adopt the attitude, well, you know, it's Portugal. If we lose this, okay, they're the stronger team. So, and that is a very dangerous position from Portugal's point of view, because they'll be relaxed, they'll be able to play their game, they'll be able to attack, you know, and they could hurt Portugal. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. It's, I'm just getting nervous talking about it, Dan.
isn't this fun? And fun is the most fun thing to have. Tom, the decision here on Fernando Sanch, while we agree he needs to step down, he needs to be removed, the Federation does have a tough decision to make solely based on timing, because there is no internet, or there won't be an international break for this team to play any kind of friendlies prior to these matches in March. I looked at the FIFA calendar. There is a international window that's open in January, but I believe that's only for us here in North America for CONCACAF. So there isn't any kind of, and they wouldn't be able to organize anything, because obviously international breaks are by FIFA are what drives these matches. But I have a feeling we're going to have Fernando Sanch at the helm in March, simply because it's a tough ask for any new manager to come in and play, hopefully, to winner-take-all matches when you haven't had a lot of time with your team. And that's what kind of drives me to think that even though he needs to go and his time has come, the FPF are in a bit of a spot that they've really put themselves in by not pulling the trigger on Fernando Sanch years past. And now they, I tell my kids all the time, it's sometimes okay to do hard things, because if you're vindicated for that choice, you'll feel amazing. You'll feel like you've accomplished something. And maybe that's the Band-Aid that needs to be just ripped off this thing and be like, you know what? We have to go in a new direction. It has to start now. If manager A, B, C, whatever it is. And I didn't mean to use three initials, because I do have my choice on who I think should be the next manager. But it'd be a tough spot to put someone in. But at the same time, you've got to make a tough decision no matter what. And it's been made tougher because the decision hasn't been made earlier. And I just think that while he needs to step down or he needs to be replaced, if I had to make a bet, I think that Fernando Sanch is going to be on the sidelines come March.
I think I agree with you, Dan. Although, like I said, I'm very much in the camp that it has to be, a change has to happen. And, you know, I think I agree with you, but I wouldn't, again, having said that, I wouldn't be hugely surprised if they did make a decision to replace him. I think now there'd be, hopefully, you know, there'd be consulting as many people as possible, you know, trying to get all the opinions they can possibly get, trying to see who's available, of course, who's willing to, to step in. And these people, these possible candidates who are willing to step in, you know, what kind of ideas they've got, specifically, you know, how to overcome this situation where they're going to have to take hold of the team basically without any training, or, you know, just maybe a few days training camp. But I think they have to have that conversation, because I come back to what I said earlier, Danny. I think it's just as big a risk to stick with. I think we're at a stage where I'd say it's a bigger risk to stick with Fernando Santos than to change the coach. You know, tough decisions, like you said, in football, you know, that's when you're at the top, when you're, you know, administrator of a top European top football nation or a top football club, you know, you have to make tough decisions all the time, don't you? And you see the, you know, managers getting sacked quite often. It's surprising. It's a bit of a shock, and it's quite a lot of reaction. Usually, you know, that's a bit unfair. He wasn't given his chance. And then a few weeks later, you know, the side's winning again, and everyone says, yeah, the right decision was made. So, yeah, tough decision, but I really do think now it's almost, it would be more of a risk to keep Fernando Santos at the helm at the moment.
So let's play what if. And let's say, what if Fernando Santos is either removed or he resigns? Do you have some names that you would like to see at least being talked about in terms of the next manager for the Seleção, in terms of what you've, the punditry from, Tom, before I get to that, you have one of the papers from, think you said it was Abala.
That's right. Yeah. This pretty much sums up what the feeling was last night or today, and what the, miserable. Yeah. Miserable. As I was just chatting to Dan afterwards, it's quite interesting because it's a false friend. So miserable in English, of course, miserable, which just means kind of sad, depressed or whatever. So it's actually quite apt in that sense. But in Portuguese, miserável really just means more, awful, terrible, useless. And so it's quite a hard-hitting headline that, just saying it really was a absolute disaster of a performance. And you have a look at the sub-headlines here. It says, Seleção tinha tudo a favor e tudo desperdiçou. So everything was in their favor, yep, and they just wasted it. And then you have, over here, Estádio da Luz, encheu-se para festejar, mas despediu-se con lenços brancos. Yeah, so, it was like party atmosphere to start with, but by the end of the game,
waving the white flag.
Yes, quite a few of the fans, waving their white handkerchiefs saying, enough is enough. And then it's got over here, gol do Renato Sanches aos 2 minutos, de nada serviu, Mitrovic fez justiça. So it's Renato Sanches, goal after 2 minutes wasn't good for anything because Mitrovic scored the goal which did justice, which was ended up making it a fair result. And you have to say, again,
absolutely,
like Danny said earlier, this is obviously a Portugal podcast, but fair play to Serbia. They came, they did the job, they played well, they showed courage, like their coach said. They it was a courageous display. And one interesting thing, actually, which he said, Dragan Stojkovic, I think is the name of the Serbia coach, is they said they knew right from the start of qualifying that this would be the key game, this would be the decisive game. And he said their whole strategy throughout qualifying has to become, to build a team spirit and to build a team, and that's a kind of key word when you look at the difference to how Portugal are playing at the moment, a team that dominates the opponent, takes the initiative in matches, that, tries to make things happen, basically, which is exactly what they did. So they came into this Portugal game and they, implemented that plan and it worked perfectly. So fair play to them. And then just here in the top corner, of course, I've got to show that as well. Fernando Santos tenha capacidade para levar Portugal ao Qatar. So, of course, we all remember Fernando Santos famously at Euro 2016, right near the start of the tournament, or I'm not sure if it was at the end of the group stages or half.
I think it was at the end of the group stage, yeah.
Yeah, saying, okay, I'm only going back to Portugal after the final, and I'm only going back to Portugal to, to join the celebrations. And we heard that, and we kind of, we found it quite refreshing, didn't we? We found it quite refreshing because that,
Tom, we fell in love with the man because he prophesized it, and that's what makes this so tough as a fan. Because, I thought about this on the drive home because I ran a race in the morning, and then my buddies and I we watched at a pizza parlor on our phones because they didn't have the game obviously in California on ESPN Plus, but we watched it on our phones, and my buddy James and I were driving home, and I'm thinking, yeah, it's clearly okay for us to thank Fernando Santos for 2016 and the Nations League, and like again, he is the most successful manager that this country has ever seen. But it almost seems like the longer he stays, the more harm he does to his legacy. Yeah. And it's like, is he going to be remembered for the man who brought us our first major international trophy? or is he going to be the man who is remembered for not getting the most out of this generation? And it's a terrible spot to be in, self-inflicted a bit, but that's why I think the FPF has dropped the ball on this. Not so much to save his legacy, obviously that they don't really care about a legacy, nor should they operate in such a manner. But there are people who, which I don't understand, because whether you like the tactics or not, it got us a trophy for the first time. And I can tell you that the pundits who are and the fans who say, 2016 was a fluke, 2016, he got lucky. Yeah, no kidding. He got lucky. They won one game in regulation. But who cares? Are you going to give the trophy back? I sure as hell am not. But at the same time, the longer this goes and gets and becomes a talking point, I think the bloom off the rose almost becomes a wilted flower. And I don't want to remember Fnun Sunch in a negative way. I want to remember him in a positive way. But the longer he stays and the longer the FPF pussyfoots around making a decision and not, making a fist and saying, thanks for the memories, but we have to go in a new direction. It's only going to make, for me and probably other fans, it's going to make it tougher for us to view Fnun Sunch in the positive manner that we should have, given what he did for the country 5 years ago.
Yeah. Well, Danny, I can't add anything to that. Very eloquently put. Exactly. Yeah. Sometimes you got to be cruel to be kind, don't you? Sometimes.
Oh my God. So sometimes, yeah, absolutely.
Sometimes perhaps the kindest thing the FBF could do now is to, say thank you very much, Fernando Santos, get someone else in. And, it won't be, especially if the new guy manages to get Portugal into the World Cup, his reputation won't be so harmed, because can't really say anything more than what you said there. Yeah, exactly. It's it's sad to see a legacy being tarnished, such a brilliant legacy. So let's wait and see.
So I think I asked this about 5 minutes ago. So let's say he does go. We got off on a bit of a tangent. So let's say he does go. I'm sure, all the channels like RTP, Seek, everybody was talking after the game. Do you have names, Tom, that you have read about that you would kind of like to see get an opportunity at this job, whether they're currently available or applying their trades someplace else? And are there names that you heard yesterday that maybe kind of piqued your interest, or just in general talked about as who could be potential suitors for replacing Fernando Santos as Portugal manager?
Yeah, it's interesting. I haven't actually heard too many names as such being.
And isn't that the
about.
Problem, Tom? Isn't that
I'm
the problem
sure.
The FPF finds themselves in? Is that they're again? It's not. It's so different than internet or than club football. Like sometimes in club football, you can find an heir apparent either within the club, or you have managers who are available that aren't international managers. Prime example is Antonio Conte coming to Tottenham when he could have had the job during the summer, but it fell the way it did. Had Manchester United beat Tottenham, or I'm sorry, had Manchester United lost to Tottenham, Antonio Conte might be at Manchester United now. It's much different in the international game, because as we've talked about before, the chemistry is so hard to build and a plan is so hard to instill, because you only get about a week to 10 days every international break with these guys. But go ahead. You haven't really heard any names then, names?
Yeah, not concrete names. I suppose everyone's got their own preferences. I think for me, because of the way Portugal have gone and this problem of really failing to get the most out of their attack-minded players, you would kind of think it's more logical to go for a manager who is a bit more, proactive in the way he sets up his teams, does play his teams a bit more attack minded. So I think two names who are available, who kind of come to mind, who I think would fit that bill and perhaps get a, an instant reaction, would be Paulo Fonseca and André Villas-Boas. I think, both of those, you see their teams, most of their teams, play good, nice football. I suppose there the question you would have is because this is also something we have to factor in, Danny, you know, shouldn't really be this way. But given the fact that Cristiano Ronaldo is who Cristiano Ronaldo is, there's no doubt that he has a big say, or, you know, he has a big influence in who would be the manager. And, you know, let's face it, he's earned it, hasn't he? He's earned the right to be in that position. And so, you know, someone like Paulo Fonseca, maybe, who has had a lot of success in his club career, but really at clubs which, you know, aren't some of the biggest clubs in the world, obviously, like, you know, you got, he had three wins at Shakhtar, didn't he? Shakhtar Donetsk in the Ukraine. Yeah, he won the Portuguese Cup at Braga, did reasonably well, didn't do fantastically, did reasonably well at Roma. But I don't know if someone like Pep or Ronaldo will kind of think he has the, you know, the kind of CV or the weight behind him. At AVB, I think just because of his personality, you know, he just seems so sure of himself the whole time, doesn't he? And I think perhaps that might work a little better from that point of view. I think he'd come in as someone who's always very refreshing to talk to, is very kind of almost the opposite to Fernando Santos. Fernando Santos kind of, you know, kind of serious, isn't he? A bit dour, a bit kind of old fashioned, you could say. In the
Tom,
in
have
the,
you ever seen Fernando Santos smile? My dad asked me that yesterday. I'm like, have you ever seen him smile? I'm like, I'm sure I saw him smile once in 2016 and once in 2019. That was about it.
That's a brilliant. There's a brilliant bit of footage, Danny, in the 2016 celebrations from the dressing room. So, you know, Portugal just won the European Championship, for God's sake. You know, they're champions of Europe. And you've got André Gomes actually pointing at Fernando Santos, just saying, smile, smile. God, you can, it's okay to smile now. And yeah, but anyway, so yeah, André Villas-Boas, I think, you know, I think he's someone who could have a, you know, quite a big impact. You know, he's very kind of, like I say, I think general in, which is maybe is good for international football as well, is one of these guys who's seems to have a few interests. It's just an interesting person, isn't he? He has interests outside of football as well. For instance, he does all that rallying stuff, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. And he has kind of slightly unusual views. Like I said, he wants to give up management before he's 40 or 45 or something. He wants to be the president of Porto or whatever. He just, it's not like your run-of-the-mill manager. So that would be like a complete break. And also, you know, his teams in general do play good, proactive, you know, attacking football. So, yeah, if you put me on the spot and said, you know, who would I like now to take over from Fernando Santos? And, yeah, I think I'd probably go for AVB. They're the one, certainly just, you know, off the top of my head, the ones that come to mind, AVB or Paulo Fonseca. Paulo Fonseca, I think AVB might carry a little bit more weight in the dressing room, which is also very important.
Sure. Yeah, I made the joke, the initials joke, a few minutes ago. I think André Villas-Boas, I think, is someone who has expressed his interest in one day taking the helm as Portugal manager.
Well, I'll tell you that. Sorry, just to.
Do you have breaking news, Tom?
Well, no, not really breaking news, there's a. I don't know if you know Zach Lowry, who's.
I've had him on the show. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent. Of course, football pundit. He's just on everything, but he's kind of taken a bit of a focus on Portuguese football recently. And he was yesterday at the game, and, you know, we've met up a couple of times in the last week or so. And he actually. He's from the States also, and he is in Portugal at the moment because he came over to cover the Web Summit from the football point of view. There's always quite a few football personalities who went there. And he actually met André Villas-Boas and had a brief interview with him. And he said that one of his next aims is to become an international manager. So I think when he told Zach this, so it would have been about 10 days ago or so, you know, I'm pretty sure he wasn't thinking of the Portugal job because, of course, nobody thought that Portugal would be in this position at this moment. But you know, yeah, so maybe kind of the stars are aligning and maybe, you know, that is a possibility.
You know, I'm going to see if I can pull up something here on my screen here. So give me a moment as, you know, someone who we interact with, Marino Peixot, just tweeted, I think, a very funny a funny tweet here. So I'm going to see. All right, let me get back to this and get here. And we do that. And now we go ahead and try to share something on the screen. Come on, Danny. You can do it. Window. Here it is. And let's see. Tom, yeah. do you see that?
The Unsackables.
The Unsackables.
Coming to a screen near you. And then a picture of Fernando Santos and Solskjaer. Yeah, it's funny, actually. Yeah. I was actually thinking about this yesterday. And I was thinking, of course, what's the player? Well, there's two now, exactly. But what players connect those two managers? And can you think, Danny? Who are the players?
Yeah, it's obviously Diog Dalot. He's the focal point.
Yeah, I was thinking, you know, Bruno Fernandes, poor old Bruno Fernandes, getting a, you know, such a, it's just been so dominant in club football for 4 or 5 years now for Sporting and then Man United. But at the moment, both at United and at Portugal, he just, you know, his form's just like falling off a cliff, isn't it? Especially for Portugal. And he just doesn't seem to be able to reproduce his best football at all. So, yeah, maybe he's a, you know, he would like a kind of different voice to hear.
Sure, absolutely. You know, Tom, before we end this, you know, we are both of the opinion here that Fernando Santos' time is obviously come and gone. Again, we thank him for everything, but it's time to make a change. A manager does not put the boots on. A manager does not kick the ball. A manager does not try to make a save. How much of this can we pinpoint to, in terms of blame, on the players who, again, we've made every excuse, or we've made every reason for there to be a change at the top here, and a change for you know, a new voice to lead this generation. But I don't feel that these players are blameless in any way. And, you know, one of the players is Bruno Fernandes. You know, I wish I could give credit to the tweet, to the person who tweeted this out, but it's something to the effect of, you know, the players can only play in the manner in which they are allowed to play. Yeah. And obviously he's been brilliant at Manchester United since coming over there. It was dominating in his last couple of seasons at Sporting. You know, we have the greatest player arguably in the world in Cristiano Ronaldo. Bernardo Silva has rejuvenated his club career with Manchester City. We arguably have the best right back. We arguably have the best center back. We have talent upon talent upon talent individually and at the club level, but it hasn't translated with this generation on the international stage. And while it's easy to blame the manager, I can't in good conscience just, you know, give the players a pass and be like, you know what, it'll click when there's a new guy in. Yeah, a new voice could, but the players have to take. I think we should be more critical of the players than I think we are of Fernando Santos, even though it's the easiest low hanging fruit to go after.
Yeah, it's a bit of a double edged sword, I'd say, Danny, because I think if you think about it, we're talking about getting to a World Cup here. So it's Ronaldo's World Cup, last World Cup chance. Font, last World Cup chance. Danilo, last World Cup chance. Moutinho, last World Cup chance. There's no doubt in my mind that those players wanted nothing more than to win yesterday. You know, I wouldn't even say their attitude in terms of, you know, the amount they run, the amount of effort they put in was off yesterday. I think it was just the organisation, you know. So again, you really have to come down to the coach, and it's or the motivation. Yeah, you're right, Dan. Of course, the players can't get a free pass. They were terrible yesterday. And maybe one thing you could say is actually those senior players like Ronaldo and Font and Danilo and Moutinho, they really needed to show leadership and, you know, to didn't really see that on the pitch that much.
That's a good
did
point.
You? Yeah, you didn't really see that. So again, maybe that's one thing which is missing. But when, you know, when a team's broken, it's difficult to, you know, I suppose for single players, no matter how good they are or how experienced they are, to try and put things right on the pitch. And so, yeah, a little bit reticent to. I get your point, Danny. You know, we can't just give the players an absolutely free pass. Obviously, they should be doing better, but by the same token, you know, I think they have to be given the conditions to thrive. And sure. You know, that is just obviously not happening through a mixture of just obviously bad coaching, a system which isn't working properly, and like I say, a certain amount of staleness. And just everything really screams, you know, we need a fresh start.
Yep. And I think it's a good spot to end here, Tom. I can't thank you enough for making time today. It's as someone who talks about this this team on this podcast, and for someone who has dedicated his life to to building the English speaking coverage of this of Portuguese football, the last few hours has been quite something. And still all to play for. Portugal still has their World Cup destiny in their hands. It'll be interesting to see how they do in March. The fixtures will be announced on November the 26th. The matches will take place the week of March the 24th. I believe 24th, 25th is the semifinal, and then the 29th of March is the final of the playoff path groups. I'll figure out what we really call that in a few months.
We've got four months to figure it out.
but still all to play for. It's disappointing for us to be in the position that we are in terms of fans and in terms of people who not only cover this team, but love this, this Seleção. And, interesting times are definitely ahead, Tom, and obviously we'll be reading everything on Portugal.net, and we'll obviously be covering it here on the podcast. But all the best to you, and thanks so much for coming in on a gloomy Monday. We'll call it that.
Yeah, no problem, Danny. Good talking to you. Anyway, it was interesting going to these matches. We see also lots of fans, and we've got some quite kind of clusters of groups of friends who we meet up with all the time, and because. Like you, Danny, of course, you know, there's a huge Portuguese diaspora of lots of people, lots of Portugal fans coming from all over the world to see the international games. And we've got this one particular group of quite a few South African, actually, support all people who, you know, Portuguese parents who now live in South Africa, and they go to watch all the tournaments, go to watch all the Portugal games. And yesterday after the game, we were just all sharing a beer together, you know, crying into our super box, and just one of them just said, "Look, come on, what's everyone so bothered about? You know, we're going to meet up again in March now, twice." So, you know, so you have to look at the bright side. So,
you know, how about we end on a light note? I had Matthew Marshall on a few episodes ago. Where did we all meet prior to the match yesterday? What was on the menu?
Yeah, well, it was funny. Yeah, Matthew was also in charge yesterday of sorting that out. It was Rodizio, Brazilian Rodizio. I remember listening to to the pod with Matt, and he actually took us to this fantastic Rodizio in the Algarve, which was a fish Rodizio, which is the first time I've had one of those. But that is a Portuguese restaurant. But yesterday, yeah, we were in Cascais, went to a Brazilian Rodizio, and just ate so much food that... Yeah, I'm glad that the match was only like 5 or 6 hours afterwards.
So that we know, we're not heading there in March. We can cross that one off. You know, make sure the bad voodoo that came from that restaurant does not carry over to the playoff here.
Blame it on the Rodizio.
All right, yes. Tom. Thank you so much for joining us, and we'll talk soon.
Yeah, speak soon then, Dan. Cheers.
All right, guys, that has been episode number 53 of the Seleção Podcast. Again, you can follow the show on Twitter at Seleção Pod, on Instagram at Seleção Pod, Facebook.com/Seleção Pod, and email the show SeleçãoPod@gmail.com. You, of course, can go and bookmark both SeleçãoPod.com and Portugal.net. Make sure you're doing that if you haven't done so already. My name has been Danny Pinto. It's always Danny Pinto, Tom, right? It's, you know, it's in this episode and in life, right? So my name is Danny Pinto. I've been your host of episode number 53 here. It's a tough day, guys. Tough few hours, but heads up. You know, who knows what could happen if anything breaks. I'll get right back on this microphone and we'll talk about it. But until then, everybody, Forza Portugal!